Hi all, I'm Steve, aka 6SJ, and I am your presenter this week. This week we have a wrap-up of Hamcamption, a couple of Bob's thoughts on the world and stuff, our regular contributions from WAG, RAOTC, Ono, and a new episode of Did You Know? Now, on with the news.
Last weekend was the Mike Beale Man Up Hamcamption weekend at Man Up, south of Boyatbrook. On the weekend, with perfect camping weather, the few but fearless made their way to Mayan Up Sports Ground for the 2026 event. Bob, VK6POP, rolled up just after lunch on Friday, followed not far behind by John, VK6ASK. Three of us teamed up to relocate the permanent Ed Fen for the soon-to-be-active SEG Mayan Up Remote Station to a higher branch in the Big Country, helped on by Bob's expert use of his fishing rod throw line. With my radio connected, I managed nearly 40 contacts over the next couple of days. The NFED worked a treat. Later in the evening, Phil, VK6DV, arrived, and by then the fire pit was raging and all settled into tall tales and true over various dinner plans and a few beverages. Saturday morning was the obligatory huddle around the fire pit until the fog cleared, then some POTA on site, and then Phil and John headed off to activate a few parks. Terry, VK6LTC, arrived and showed off his new tow bar antenna mount to much interest. A much more professional-looking version to what we saw at the Mount Barker car boot sale. After another terrific evening around the fire, the morning plan was to pack up and prepare to leave site. Phil and John headed off for more POTA parks to take advantage of the morning 40-metre opening, and as I understand it, made quite a few contacts. By late morning, everyone was departed, and very little was needed to return the site to its original pristine condition. Thanks to the guys who travelled from Perth, Bunbury and Albany for what was a very enjoyable weekend of radio and camping. I'm sure we will be doing it again in 2027. This is Darren, VK6EK, Secretary, Southern Electronics Group.
Let's talk about amateur radio clubs. How's your club going? Is it better or worse now than it was a few years ago? Is it bubbling along perfectly with no room for improvement? Of course it isn't, nor will it ever be so. So why am I saying this? It's because your club is a dynamic thing, as are its members, so things change all the time. This is not a bad thing, in fact, it's a very good thing. Now let's unravel this a bit. Let's say you identified some problems, thought about it, then applied a fix. Everything was fine. It may well have been fine, however, other problems may have popped up. Don't be too concerned. Recurring or new issues presented to a group are partly due to changing circumstances. People changing, or changing their minds, and other issues due to a dynamic membership. What makes a thriving, successful club different from one that declines is its ability to embrace change and to adapt to new challenges without losing sight of the aims and objectives of the club. These aims and objectives are the reality. They are the reason the club exists. The aims and objectives say, we are together in this club because we want to do these things together. It's worthwhile to look at the club's rules, especially the aims and objectives of the club part, and measure what the club is doing against those objectives. How do your club's actions, that is, what you're actually doing, stack up against your club's objectives? Perhaps it's time to take a serious look at how the club's activities stack up, measured against the aims and objectives of the club. I've heard people say that the club is declining because the hobby is in decline. That one doesn't hold water at all. If the state of the hobby is to blame for your amateur radio club's decline, how would you explain the many successful clubs around the country? So what can you do? Keep a firm hold on the aims and objectives of your club, and your club will survive. I'm Bob, VK6POP.
Hello everyone, this is Clive, VK6 Charlie Sierra Whiskey, the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia. Just about everyone listening to this knows that the first Monday of each month, except for January, the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia, the RAOTC, relays throughout Australia its monthly bulletin of club news plus a couple of short talks. What is the RAOTC? What are its aims? And can you become a member? The club was formed in 1974 by a group of amateurs in Melbourne and has spread from there throughout Australia. The club's objectives are to maintain the interest and original pioneer spirit of amateur radio, honour the history and heritage of our hobby, and encourage good fellowship amongst all radio operators. With around 500 members, this is probably the largest amateur radio club in Australia. Being entitled to call yourself a radio old-timer has nothing to do with your age. It all depends upon how long you've held or been qualified to hold your amateur radio license. Full membership of the RAOTC is available to any person who has held or been qualified to hold an amateur license for at least 25 years. Associate membership is available to anyone who has held or been qualified to hold an amateur license for at least 10 years. This now includes at least some Foundation calls, and yes, we do indeed have some Foundation licensee members already. Again, your age has nothing to do with it. The club is a loose-knit one, yet the glue which holds it all together is mainly the monthly bulletin, plus our twice-yearly 60-page, high-quality, profusely illustrated magazine, written entirely by members, and which covers a wide range of interests. Many consider it the best club magazine within VK. Members come from all walks of life, and while we may be radio old-timers, we certainly aren't dinosaurs. And, as our bulletins illustrate, we do try to keep up with the latest developments in radio and electronics. VK6 membership covers a wide area, but a small group living within the Perth metro region does meet each month on the second Tuesday of each month for a lunchtime gathering. In VK6, the monthly bulletins are transmitted via the News West linked repeaters, and our thanks to the West Australian Repeater Group for this facility, plus we also have HF relays on 160, 80 and 40 metres by Phil, VK6 Golf X-Ray, and Chris, VK6 Juliet India. If you'd like more information, please visit the club website at www.raotc.org.au or just Google RAOTC and you'll be taken straight to the club website. 73 from Clive, VK6 CSW.
HAM College is a Perth-based organisation focused on providing top-quality training to enable students to attain their foundation, standard and advanced licences. We run a foundation course in the first weekends of February, April, June, August, October and December of each year, with the exams being run the weekend after. We also run a standard advanced course on Tuesday nights this year, starting on Tuesday, March the 10th, and finishing in October. While there are quicker ways to get the qualification, we believe our approach provides the best depth of knowledge of any course in the country and providing the most useful start to your amateur career. To book a place on any of our courses, please use the Contact Us page on our website at www.hamcollege.org.au. We are constantly looking for additional instructors to assist in delivering our courses, and in particular, looking for one more instructor to join our standard and advanced course team. This would suit an electronics professional or anyone with a good depth of knowledge of electronics in general. We've had a number of foundation licensed hams also assisting in delivering the foundation course, so please don't let your license level prevent you from assisting. More experienced hams are also sought after for teaching all levels of training. Our training and support crew are well respected and a friendly crew of hams. We learn from each other and our students. We're also keen to add to our training courses to provide training in other aspects of the hobby, but would need additional instructors for this. So if you have a topic you'd like to teach, please contact us via our Contact Us page. And again, to book a place on any of our courses, you can contact us via our Contact Us page at www.hamcollege.org.au. Thank you.
Foundations of Amateur Radio. The other day I went for a walk around the block for the first time in a while. It's something I did for a time and then, for several reasons, mostly to do with health, didn't. For me, it's the mental equivalent of having a shower with the added benefit of not having to dry my hair. In other words, it's a place I go to with the intent of generating shower thoughts. During my walk away from the forces pulling me in all manner of directions, none of which have anything to do with amateur radio, away from my keyboard, away from my screen, away from technology challenges, although I'll admit that my phone was in my pocket, I took about 20 minutes to walk and daydream, to follow my thoughts and see where they'd end up. I got to this point because sitting at my desk I was getting nowhere trying to put together my thoughts in any sequence at least resembling coherence. While it's happened before, it's not something that occurs often. The day before I'd started writing, almost as if possessed, about what amateur radio means to me. But during my walk I started wondering about the people who leave this hobby and the community embracing it. I've often said that F-Troop is a weekly net for new and returning amateurs, both people who have a license that's still hot off the printer, and others who have one typed up on an IBM Selectric, signed with a quill, ink faded with age, paper yellowed by sunlight, potentially with coffee mug rings on it, stashed somewhere in a drawer. I wondered about those returning amateurs and asked myself about the nature of leaving a hobby. It occurred to me that people leave for many different reasons, and it would be foolhardy to consider that all of those reasons are controllable by our community. While bullying and arguments exist, each responsible for their share of people leaving, it seems to me that some amateurs leave because there's too much other stuff going on in their lives, things that actively or passively prevent amateurs from participating. This is difficult for me to relate to because, for me, amateur radio is an intrinsic part of my life, in that it often quietly shapes how I view the world and learn from it. I see it when I notice a television antenna pointing in the wrong direction, when I install a new Wi-Fi router somewhere, when a signal is lost to a manned mission around the moon, when I open the garage door and when I read that researchers at the National Institute for Standards and Technology, better known as NIST, have developed a new method for creating chips that process photons similarly to how traditional chips process electrons, which can generate a rainbow of colours, though they didn't use the letter U to describe them. While those examples might be somewhat obvious, amateur radio is also there when I see someone share a tiny electronic paper screen on social media, and I consider how I might use that when I go portable. It's there when I'm walking in a park and when I'm looking at a beach. It's there when I see metal artworks or painter's poles at the local hardware store, and when I watch a movie with radios anywhere on screen. It's there when the topic of physics arises and when some electromagnetic phenomenon occurs. Like radio waves and air, it's pretty much part of my daily existence. I will add that this same depth of connection exists between me and computers. Watching Flight of the Conchords, I cannot help but notice that Murray's computer keeps changing, and that I miss the Commodore VIC-20 sitting behind him, surrounded by ever-changing New Zealand tourism posters. In other words, I cannot imagine ever not having radio or computers in my life. I'm mentioning all this because my experience isn't universal. While I'm sure that I'm not alone in this deep affinity, the community as a whole invariably ranges between people who could take or leave the hobby at a moment's notice and those who couldn't live without it. And beyond our community, there are people who are, depending on your perspective, blissfully or woefully unaware of our existence. All this to say, your experience of this hobby is not the same as that for everyone else. Neither is your experience of life. This is revealed more clearly in what we think the hobby means, whether or not FT8 is a blessing or a curse, contesting is ridiculous or amazing, why 40 metres is better than 20 metres, or vice versa, and if the hobby died when the ITU stopped requiring Morse code, or saw a rebirth. It should be obvious by now, but I think it's important to be explicit. Amateur radio is your hobby. It's what it means for you. Not for your mate, not for me, not for the people in your club, the local email list or social media. Just you. So use this as an opportunity to think about this, in my not-so-humble opinion, absolutely amazing hobby and what place it has in your life. I'm Ono, Victor Kilo 6, Foxtrot Lima Alpha Bravo.
G'day from WARG and welcome to WARG News for Sunday the 24th of May 2026. I'm Mark VK6XLZ. A quick reminder that the 2026 WARG Ham Radio Junk Sale will be on Saturday, the 13th of June, and general admission starts at 10 a.m. with a gold coin donation. There will be food available on the day from our caterers, handled by Mitch VK6XB and his lovely XYL Christine. Now, bookings are going apace, as Anthony VK6AXB informs me. But if you are wanting to be a vendor or seller on the day, please fire off an email to secretary@warg.org.au and let us know to expect you. Those selling will be accessing the building at 9 a.m. an hour earlier to set up. Now, the building is the same as the past 2 years for this our third annual junk sale, and it will be the First Midland Scout Hall, which is located at number 10 Helen Street in Bellevue. So the 2026 WARG Ham Radio Junk Sale from 10 a.m. on Saturday, 13th of June at First Midland. Finally today, a reminder for you that the weekly technical and general net for WARG will be beginning at 10:30 a.m. this morning after the callbacks of this Sunday morning News West, but on the linked All-Star VK6 hubs and on VK6 RLM, 146.750 or Channel 3 in the old money, right here in Perth. If you're listening to this news in the evening or some other time, you've missed it. It's next week. 7-3s from VK6, Radio Radio Golf.
You are listening to News West, your weekly news from VK6 ARN. If you have any items for the news, the latest they can be submitted is noon Friday. If you have an item you would like read out by the news team, please give plenty of notice to allow someone to record the item before the Friday deadline. This is Darren, VK6EK, for Amateur Radio News, VK6 ARN.
Hi, I'm Steve, VK6SJ, with this week's episode of Did You Know? Today I thought I would talk about masts, the construction thereof and maintenance. Everyone thinks of their radio as a hero of your setup. It can be the most expensive investment you'll make in the hobby, depending on what direction you're heading. Eclipsing it, or at least coming a close second, is likely to be the mast or masts supporting your antennas. I say likely because it isn't always. If you're running a 4-metre pole on your roof, this could be quite economical, but that's not part of today's topic. So, you've already bought your whiz-bang radio, learned how to use it, and then realised that the make of the radio has little to do with the performance of the station. By far the biggest differentiator is the height and type of antenna you're running. To get the height with a large high-gain antenna, you need a mast or tower. Brand new masts, built to Australian standards for the antennas we are placing on them, are very expensive, and also only ever purchased when the insurance company is paying for it. $30,000 to $50,000 is not an unusual amount for a compliant brand new 20-metre mast, now that the likes of Nelly have left the market. For most of us mere mortals, we keep an eye out for a second-hand mast and repurpose it. Second-hand masts tend to have little value in the commercial sector and more cost is associated with the removal of a mast than its residual value afterwards. In fact, if an owner can get away with it, the most common way to drop a mast is to cut the guys and let it fall. So you've looked around and found a good 20-metre mast and it's ready to install in your backyard. If it's a repurposed commercial structure, it was likely designed for a few UHF Yagis or folded dipoles and little else. Given that no one else in the radio sector except Defence use high-gain HF Yagis like we do, you need to consider this prior to installing the mast and mounting that ultra beam you bought, or even a simple three-element tri-band Yagi. If you're lucky, there may be a generic design for the mast, but generally that generic design has assumed a simple load like a UHF collinear vertical and a six-element UHF Yagi. Generally though, before you guess about the foundations and hope that the mast is good enough for what you intend to install on it, You really should get a design produced professionally by a mechanical engineer experienced in mast designs. Providing you have all the specs of the mast, like member sizing, type of mast and construction materials, height and what you intend to mount on it, you can expect to pay in the order of $1,500 to $2,000 for a compliant design. The design will give you the following: sizing construction details for the foundations, size and footprint of any guying required, any modifications to the mast to hold rotators, etc. The design can also account for restrictions you may have around the available real estate for the mast and guy points. For instance, if you need to place guy points less distance from the mast than the generic design, by using more concrete and thicker guy wires and possibly some structural reinforcement of the mast, you can safely bring those guy points in. In my day job, I've seen a lot of masts installed that have been designed on a wing and a prayer, and generally by the time I get to see it, it's all ended in tears. Common issues I've seen include no reinforced rods within foundations. Concrete on its own doesn't actually bind that well. After a few years, it'll start to crumble unless it has this binding, which is formed with rotting. My tower foundation has around 60 metres of 20mm rod embedded in the 6 cubic metres of concrete poured for the foundation, and this was driven from the design. Only one bulldog clip holding the guy wire to a turnbuckle. In a strong wind, the wire will easily pull through a single bulldog clip. You need a minimum of 2, but preferably 3. Metal fatigue in the structure. This often occurs close to the base of the structure and results in the mast or tower just folding over at the base. I've seen bases with as little as 2 to 3 millimetres of metal left under the rust. Rusted bolts from top to bottom. Apart from the obvious risk of parts of the mast coming adrift, it creates high resistance points in the mast, making a lightning strike more likely and creating RF noise that'll affect your reception, particularly on HF. This leads to the other area that's often neglected, which is the maintenance of the structure. Guide masts are particularly at risk as guy wires can easily become loose, causing a mast to become unstable. Checking the tension on the guys on a guide mast should be done annually, and verticality, i.e. that the mast is still vertical, of both guide masts and self-supporting towers are the minimum checks that should be done annually. Well, I hope that gives you, those of you with or contemplating getting a mast, something to think about. This has been Steve, aka 6SJ, with another episode of Did You Know?
This is VK6ARN, and you're listening to News West.
I think I may have touched on this topic previously, however, given the age demographic of amateurs, it's a topic worth touching on from time to time. Within families, the whole human process is seen from beginning to end. The expectant parents, birth, growing up and maturing, starting families, and along the way, we die. I know it sounds a bit macabre, however, we do die. Often people die unexpectedly, or as they say, before their time. Why am I rattling on about dying on an amateur radio news service? It's simple. We as hobbyists accumulate a lot of equipment. Sometimes we'll have infrastructure such as masts or towers in our backyards, on the roof and in the car. Not knowing what to do with granddad's radio equipment raises conflicting feelings within a family. We're still grieving granddad's death, and we're faced with clearing out this shed of a pile of mysterious equipment and drawers full of spare parts that could be used for heaven knows what. Do we erase granddad quickly by ordering in a skip and performing a rapid purge of the shed? Or do we acknowledge that there will be other people around for whom the equipment holds some value? There's an old joke going around that says, I'm terrified that when I die, my wife will sell my radios for what I told her that I'd paid for them. The facts of the matter are that your wife or children most likely wouldn't have a clue about the value of your gear, giving them the added stress of working out what to do. What is it that you can do to erase that burden on your family, or at least lessen it? And here are some suggestions. Firstly, if you haven't already done so, make a will. I remade mine a few months ago. The previous one was about 50 years old and out of date. In my will, I wrote in the usual things about who gets the lot and who shares it if the first one goes first. Straightforward, really. I then included a line that gave all of my amateur radio equipment to an amateur radio club to be disposed of or used as they wish. That clearly takes the burden off the family. It all goes to someone who will gain some benefit from it. The next action is to tell your family what's in the will. I gave my children a copy each and told them where the original is kept. I must say it's been sobering thinking about making these late-in-life arrangements. However, that is a part of life, isn't it? I'm Bob, VK6POP.
The Northern Corridor Radio Group gathers for a chat, cooked breakfast and work on current projects every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. Visitors and prospective new members are always welcome. The club is on Nangara Road at Whiteman Park on the first right turn after the Tonkin Highway entrance when travelling east towards Allenbrook. The club has an excellent station with multiple operating rooms, an EME station, a remote station for all members to use, club repeaters on 2 metres, 70 cms and 23 centimetres, and a bunch of other activities for members of all interests.
This is Peter, VK3YE, and you're listening to News West.
Normally we have Roy's helpline, however, due to circumstances way out of Roy's control and coupled with the fact that he has no items for sale or wanted, we have no Roy's helpline this week. Well, that brings this week's broadcast to an end. Thank you to presenters, contributors, broadcasters and especially all you listeners. We're always looking for material for the broadcast, so please feel free to send in your club news or any article of interest in either voice or text. Now please stand by for the callbacks, or if your broadcast doesn't have a callback, put out a call yourself and create your own callback and send us the details. 73s, this is Steve, VK6SJ, at VK6ARN, News West.